Welcome, everyone. This is Marcy Newman, your host at HeartShift Radio, and I am actually here live at the IANS conference in Westminster, Colorado. And for those of you who are new listeners, IANS stands for the International Association for Near-Death Studies. So as you can well imagine, this is the last day of our conference, and we have had an incredible time. Everyone sharing their experiences, their thoughts, and of course, their hearts, and how all of these heart shifts have occurred that brought us all together. So I have the privilege and the honor of having Dr. Jan Holden here with me today. And I was very drawn to Jan as she was a moderator on a panel the other day. And I'd like to officially welcome you. But I also want you to know, Jan, that I've been so much looking forward to our conversation. So thank you so much for agreeing to this interview.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Marcy. Thanks.
So can you begin by telling our audience, because some of them are complete newbies. Many of them actually may have never even heard of this topic before, but what has brought you to this place?
Well, I guess the most concrete event was back when I was working on my doctoral dissertation in counselor education, that I started one dissertation topic and it aborted, and I started another and it aborted. And anyway, five topics later, I was proposing a study related to near-death experiences. And that's the one that went all the way through, and I finished my doctoral degree. And a lot of people, when they do a dissertation, they never want to touch that topic again. They're just sick of it. But I was just the opposite. I was absolutely enthralled. And so I have been researching NDEs ever since, and that was the mid-1980s. So it's been about 30 years.
So what was a catalyst? I mean, what drew you to that topic? Because back then, that was not a topic that was prevalent on normal everyday conversation.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, I first of all, when I was growing up, I was always interested in topics like this, and I read as a teenager Edgar Cayce and those sorts of things. When I was in college, my father read a book called The Great Soul Trial that involved a will with hundreds of thousands of dollars that had been left for the research on the survival of the human soul after death. And the book included courtroom testimony from research directors of like the American Society for Psychical Research and the Psychical Research Foundation talking about how they would pursue research on the survival of the human soul after death. So then some years later, Raymond Moody's book came out, Life After Life, that really, where he coined the term near-death experience. The phenomenon really has been known throughout history, and it had even been published about before, but having a name really sort of consolidated focus on it. And then a few years later, I was, and I will say one of the things that enthralled me about his book was the phenomenon of veridical perception. And this is where the person is experiencing their consciousness functioning outside their body, and they perceive things in the physical world that either, that based on both the condition and position of their physical body, they shouldn't be able to perceive, but they do, and then it's later verified as being accurate. And in some cases, these are things that the person never could have imagined, but were verified to be on target. And so that was what was inspiring me when I was doing my doctoral research. In fact, the fourth idea that I had was to do an actual study in a hospital, and I did the first prospective study where we tried to capture someone resuscitated from cardiac arrest, seeing visual targets that we had planted in the rooms in the hospital, and hope that they would see these visual targets and then come back and report what they were. And we were not successful, which is why after a year I had to give up and do something else related to near-death experiences. And since then, a handful of other researchers have tried similar studies, and none of us have succeeded yet in capturing this phenomenon. But we do have now a collection of verified paranormal phenomena verified by a credible third party related to near-death experiences, all compiled in a book called The Self Does Not Die. And it is IANS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, first foray into publication. We believed in the book enough that we ventured into our first publication effort. And so it just became available earlier this year in 2017.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
It is amazing. Tell me something. Why do you think a book of that nature is so important?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Well, I think from studying NDEs all these years that NDEs have come back with some really important messages for individuals and for humanity. And in order for those messages to be taken seriously, people have to really consider NDEs to be valid. And one of the ways that we can show that they're valid.
I just wanted to clarify for our listeners, an NDE is a near-death experience.
Right, exactly. So to confirm that they're valid or somehow substantiate that they're valid, veridical perception is one of the very best ways. Because, you know, people say they left their body, they perceive the material world, they often also perceive transmaterial entities and environments, and come back with very definite new values that are like not valuing materialism as much, wanting to be of service to others, appreciating life, feeling a sense of purpose, and that our purpose really is about advancing in our ability to love. And so for all of those messages to be believed, people first have to get past questions about whether near-death experiences are credible phenomena.
And how successful do you think that you've been in your work? And I sort of look at the entire IANS community. How successful have we been at this point in validating this work and and creating this platform of credibility?
Well, I've certainly seen progress over the last 30 years. We're past questions about we verified that near-death experiences are different from hallucinations. They're different from dreams. So there's much more knowledge of and acceptance of them. I think we still have a ways to go, and that has to do with that science is dominated by philosophical materialism, the idea that everything is a product of the physical world, and so we're sort of bucking the general concept of how the world works that is dominating science right now. So there's still a ways to go, but I see that we've made progress.
And would you mind differentiating between the NDE, hallucination, and dream?
Sure.
For our listeners, I think that this is really important.
Yeah, I agree that it is. There are certainly some similarities in the sense that they are personal experiences that can't be independently verified just on the basis of the experience itself. For example, after both hallucinations and dreams, when people return to quote-unquote normal consciousness, they look back on a hallucination or dream and say with clarity and certainty, that was not real. That's not the case with near-death experiences. People look back on the experience and are adamant that the experience was as real or more real than their normal everyday consciousness. So that's one feature. Hallucinations tend to be disorganized and to be in, to contain things that are clearly not real. You know, bugs crawling under my skin clearly is not real. Dreams also contain a lot of unreality, and crazy things happen in our REM dreams. You know, so one person turns into another person, and things appear and disappear the way they wouldn't in normal reality. And those kinds of things, those kinds of irrational, crazy kind of things, just don't seem to be present in near-death experiences. NDEs tend to be very, they have a narrative and...
what do you mean by that?
That there's a coherent story quality to them that is that you don't find in hallucinations or REM dreams. REM dreams sometimes have something of a storyline, but at some point weird things happen and it doesn't make sense. And that just isn't characteristic of near-death experiences. Another feature is that, as everybody who's ever remembered a dream knows, that within usually hours, the memory of the dream fades. It kind of wisps away. And whereas near-death experiences remain vivid in people's mind for decades afterwards. And there have been actual studies where NDEers were asked shortly after their NDE to describe it. And then they were recontacted 10 and 20 years later and asked again just to describe their NDE and then do analysis of the two accounts. And there are virtually no differences. So even our normal memories of what we experience in normal life tend to deteriorate. They get changed sometimes. Mm-hmm. But these kinds of experiences, NDEs, and other kinds of transpersonal experiences, these are the whole category of experiences that transcend the usual personal limits of space, time, or identity, like after-death communication. They just remain really vivid in people's minds.
And I'd like to jump into that one for a moment. But first, I want to ask you, there's been a lot of talk at this conference in particular about experiencing the NDE without needing to go into death. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be so much evidence mm-hmm. that we can go into that place of such expansiveness in our own consciousness that we can experience this. We don't need to die in order to do that. Mm-hmm. Could you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, certainly we actually know that that people have what we call near-death-like experiences in circumstances other than a close brush with death. And as I've come to conceptualize it, it tends to occur under extreme circumstances. So in meditation, a person is extremely calm and focused, and an NDE-like experience might emerge. I know someone who had an experience like this in a hot tub, in a state of extreme relaxation. But the other is also the case that people sometimes have experiences like this under extreme exertion. Mm. People who run 25K, you know, races, for example. And people have them in extreme emotional states, extreme grief. I heard one guy talk about an NDE-like experience that occurred when he was in a state of extreme jealousy, arguing with his girlfriend, and suddenly he was out of his body and having this other experience that, of course, when he returned to his body, took the argument in a very different direction, a much more positive direction. So I think that, people have reported these kinds of experiences even with psychedelics. One of the presentations here was by Al Botkin, who developed the technique of induced after-death communication. And while he was working with a person who had had a near-death experience, this person had they re-entered their or re-experienced their near-death experience.
So like a spontaneous
reliving of the experience, right.
Interesting.
So states of consciousness that are very focused, like during induced after-death communication or meditation, I think are probably the best ways to facilitate this kind of thing. At the same time, we know that out of all the people who survive a close brush with death, only about 1 in 5 reports a near-death experience, so 4/5 don't. So, and of course, out of all the people who've meditated, not everyone has had a near-death-like experience. So these experiences remain essentially spontaneous, and the most we can do is create the circumstances in which they're more likely to occur.
Very, very interesting. Do you think that as we continue with this research, that we'll be able to give people tools for entering into that space in a way that is sort of programmed for their healing, for a conscious awareness, for experiencing themselves as an expansive being so that they can make a greater extension of themselves in the world? I mean, do you foresee that this research would enable people to have the tools easily accessible so that they can start to live life differently?
Well, actually, I see two possible avenues there. One is that we already know that people just learning about near-death experiences themselves sometimes catch what researcher Ken Ring called the benign virus of NDEs and come to adopt more NDE-like values and ways of living and choices in their lives.
And excuse me, by the way, we've seen that here at the conference. There are people here who have not experienced an NDE, don't even know anyone who's experienced an NDE, but yet are so drawn to the subject that I spoke with someone who came from New Zealand, traveling across the world just to be with their own community.
Yes,
like minds and like hearts.
Absolutely, that's right. So so people don't actually have to have the experience to benefit from those of us who have. And when I say us, I'm not including, I have not had a near-death experience, but I've had many other transpersonal experiences. And in terms of having the experience directly, I think we actually really already have the technology through meditation and techniques like induced after-death communication that are available for people to get in counseling to facilitate these kinds of things. And also past life regression can facilitate these kinds of experiences.
That's something that I offer.
Yeah.
Okay. And I agree with you. Excuse me. There is so much potential there for self-exploration.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And I know with some of the other conversations that I've had with some of the other speakers here, what, you know, excuse me, jumps into my mind is, of course, Dr. Eben Alexander. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the sacred sound frequencies.
Yeah.
So where do you see that fitting into?
Yeah, I agree that
accessibility.
Yeah, that may very well contribute to a technology that facilitates. But once again, they're using sound to facilitate people turning inward, like what happens with meditation, mm-hmm. or with IADC, or with past life regression. So absolutely. And I had an experience walking down the hall. One of the people here brought those sound bowls.
The crystal bowls.
Yeah, crystal bowls. And I just walked by, and hearing the tone of one of those just sent chills through my spine. And
I
so I absolutely believe that sound can be a facilitator.
It's almost like a portal opens.
Yes.
And we enter into a completely different vibrational frequency.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's immediate.
Yes, that's right.
And so anyone listening who has never experienced those crystal bowls or music that is acoustically
attuned,
calibrated exactly for this purpose, I highly recommend that you explore that.
Yeah.
One of the things that you had spoken of earlier in distinguishing the near-death experience over the hallucination or a dream was alluding to particular message that mm-hmm. comes through with the NDE. Mm-hmm. What have you found is that commonality in terms of message? What kind of messages do people come back with?
Mm-hmm. Well, the single biggest theme that I've perceived from NDEers is that human life is purposeful. We're here for a purpose, and that the purpose is to advance in our capacity to love and to love both ourselves and others and the planet so that human life can be sustained and more people can have this experience. It's an opportunity for a particular kind of spiritual growth that can be achieved only in this kind of human environment. And so it's a very important phenomenon that we're all participating in. And so when NDEers talk about the importance of love, they're talking about being committed to the well-being of themselves and others, and doing everything we can to be of help and support to each other.
Beautifully said. So this whole concept of self-love,
mm-hmm.
I know that I was speaking with someone a few days ago, and their whole concept of self-love was almost immediately this one of separation, you know, selfishness, and mm-hmm. and that you know, self-love is something almost to be feared,
mm-hmm.
and yet those that I've interviewed mm-hmm. that have a very clear connection to the importance of our spiritual growth mm-hmm. and expansion, self-love has a completely different connotation.
Yeah,
could you speak about that, please?
Sure. Well, when I'm hungry and I get food for myself, that's self-love. You know, in my definition, love is the intention to maximize the well-being of whomever. And so it is, no one can maximize my well-being as much as I can. I know what I need. And in order for me to be of service to others, I need to be well. So self-love is a form of love of others. Conversely, if I don't take care of myself, I become a burden to others. And not that it's bad, so to speak, to lean on others or, you know, allow them to take care of me, but if I'm going to be able to do the most for others, then I need to take care of myself. And that's really all that self-love is. It's caring for myself. That's kind of on a sort of more physical analogy, but it also has to do psychologically with forgiving myself for my limitations and my mistakes and my occasional selfish acts that I absolutely do, and just as I would forgive others. So it kind of goes back to that golden rule, which actually is a rule in all of the major religions, to treat yourself as you would treat others. And so loving myself is part of, it doesn't say to do better unto others as you would do. It says, do unto others as. So as I would love you, I love myself.
So what I'm hearing you say really is that this self-love sort of goes hand in hand with the ability to extend yourself.
Mm-hmm. To be of service.
So if you're not recognizing, if you're not remembering that you're worthy of being loved, that you are cherished, and how important you are to the intricacies of partnership in the universe, then you cannot truly be present in that partnership.
Yeah.
That it actually is dependent on it. And the fact that forgiveness, I agree, from my perspective, forgiveness is probably one of the greatest acts of self-love mm-hmm. that we can gift ourselves. Mm-hmm. But again, if we're not in recognition that this is mandatory, mm-hmm. our well-being is mandatory in order to be able to extend mm-hmm. any kind of love, gratitude, forgiveness, mm-hmm. and extend the hand of partnership, mm-hmm. then we just keep sort of chasing our tail, don't we?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, very well said. Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really get to delve into this too much, but you, before we began our interview, you were talking about a very emotional reaction that you had to some information mm-hmm. that you were downloading. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with spirit communication, mm-hmm. so communication that takes place after someone has passed.
Yes.
So we have a couple of things going on at this conference.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody needs to understand how amazing this is. Because, yes, there's this one aspect of the near-death experience mm-hmm. where, as you framed it, as being this brush with death. But then we have this other aspect of the conference that is dealing with the evidence mm-hmm. that life exists mm-hmm. after what we perceive as death, and in mm-hmm. fact, that there is no death. Mm-hmm. And we have now so much scientific evidence that not only points to that, but proves it. Mm-hmm. It's real evidence that life continues on. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this communication. Tell me about how it has affected you. Mm-hmm. And actually, I can feel your heart mm-hmm. Becoming very soft and mm-hmm. opening. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain excitement mm-hmm. in the energy that mm-hmm. just shifted. Mm-hmm. I can feel your heart shift.
Yeah.
This is very near and dear to you. Can you tell me about this?
Very, yeah. Well, the conceptually, the link between NDEs and after-death communication, or ADCs, is that in near-death experiences, a lot of times people do see their deceased loved ones. And often the deceased loved one, just as happens in ADCs of all circumstances, the loved one appears healthy, state of well-being. And but in NDEs, they often are the messenger that the person needs to go back to physical life. So it might be that the NDEer meets their deceased grandmother, and the grandmother says, "You've got to go back." So that was a kind of bridge for me into the study of after-death communication, because it happens in a lot of other circumstances, much more frequently than in near-death experiences. And so, former doctoral student, Jenny Streithorn, now Dr. Streithorn, did her dissertation, a systematic review of all the research that had ever been published on after-death communication. And between 1894 and 2006, there had been 35 studies involving over 50,000 people altogether from 24 different countries. So this is a very comprehensive
wow.
review of everything that researchers had ever found about after-death communication. And what she got from all of that synthesis of all those findings is that we now know that 1 in 3 people sometime in their life experiences after-death communication, which is this at least the sense of presence of a deceased person, or after another NDE researcher, I prefer to call them disembodied, because mm-hmm. they're still existing, but just not in physical body.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to adopt that one myself.
Yeah. And that after the death of a loved one, as many as 80% of people have this experience. And we know that other than the fact that women report it more than men, and we don't know if that's because they have it more or they're just more courageous to disclose it.
Or maybe open more to receive it.
Exactly. They may very well be. That other than that demographic, every other demographic, there's no difference. So people of all ages, all health conditions, all nationalities, all belief systems, all religions, just any demographic you can think of. It's an equal opportunity experience. And the after effects of the experience are overwhelmingly positive. And I just completed a study asking people about how their after-death communication affected their sense of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And people who are familiar with the Bible will recognize that these are what St. Paul called the fruits of the Spirit, which is a litmus test for determining what comes from, what does and doesn't come from the Holy Spirit. And he said, if something yields these things, then it is of the Holy Spirit. And what we found was overwhelmingly it yields those things. And that's what I was crying in the airport about. Wow. I was preparing my presentation, and we had my research associate, Leslie Holmes, had selected from some all the people who had said that their ADC had drastically increased their sense of love, joy, etc.
After death communication, ADC.
Right. That she had selected one narrative. I told her it didn't have to be the best narrative, just one that really gave people in our audience the flavor of what these people said. Because if they said that it either increased or decreased the fruit, we gave them an opportunity to explain. And it was those explanations, like the one, if I wish I had it exactly in front of me, but I think I'll be able to get close enough. The one she selected for drastically increased the sense of love, the person said, my sense of love and connection to my deceased loved one was just so enhanced by this experience. But even more than that, my love of a universe that operates the way it does. So this wow. universe that enabled her to reconnect with her disembodied loved one, she loved her, that sense of love was great. And then just the whole mechanism for being able for that to happen.
So it's a perfect example of an experience of such magnitude that the heart opens, becomes so expansive that it automatically extends beyond itself to connect on a more universal level.
Absolutely. People feel more connected, a greater sense of faith, and joy and peace. And so it's a very fruitful experience.
So it actually sort of brings us back to the part in our conversation about self-love. Mm-hmm. In that moment, the recognition that I'm so loved.
Yes.
I'm so loved. And taking, being able in that moment to take that in, and then it just being automatically extended out.
Absolutely. That it is really true.
It's so important for us, I think, to enter into our daily lives from this place of conscious awareness that these opportunities are provided for us at all times, because from my perspective, it's part of our purpose here, right?
Yeah.
To become more expansive for the purpose of extending love. I mean, what else could there be?
Yes, exactly. What other ultimate purpose could there be?
Yeah. And of course, we have so many ways that we can come to this place. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the opportunities that are provided for us, but it's a one shared purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
And I think Andy Ears agree as a group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's remarkable that we've all found each other and that we have this organization, this platform for which to work for and work with, in this coming together. And I can't help but believe that it's these opportunities that we have that just have an incredible impact on the collective consciousness as a whole.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. These, strings, right, that connect us all are being fortified.
Yeah.
And gives it sort of a greater momentum.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah. And on a very specific level, I know that when I'm leaving this conference and just chatting with people, people leave the conference feeling expansive, and it affects their personal consciousness. And I agree, there's a collective. That's another thing that people talk about, that the feel of this conference is just so different from anything else they've been to. And I think it's because of the themes we've been touching on.
I hadn't actually thought about that, but you're right. I think in most cases we go to conferences and we're intent on taking in for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Where here, we're very much aware that whatever we take in for ourselves is for the purpose of sharing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That whatever we take from it is here to be shared and has a great impact, the potential to have impact on the world and, as we know, beyond.
Yeah.
Where do you see your work going, Jan?
I'm not sure. I'm going to be retiring from the university in a year, and I'm actually hoping to be able to do more research and writing afterwards, so I won't be distracted by things that don't really touch my soul.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I know that I want to write a book about the research-based evidence for all kinds of phenomena, transpersonal phenomena surrounding death. So not only NDEs and ADC, but premonitions of death. There's a phenomenon called terminal lucidity, past life memories, and so forth, and have a chapter on each of those that's very research and evidence-based. Again, to shore up the credibility of those phenomena so that we can get past that question of their credibility to what messages they really have for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's also why this conference is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we're really seeing, we're living, we're experiencing the connection between spirituality and science.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree completely.
And that they're so intertwined. Mm-hmm. We can't separate them.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have here, which I think is remarkable,
mm-hmm.
are so many incredible scientific minds like mm-hmm. yours that are helping to bridge these gaps mm-hmm. in what has been, up until this point, seen as credible in
yeah.
the scientific world.
Yeah.
And I think the more that, you know, we are in this environment
mm-hmm.
and give each other permission to go beyond where we've ever been before, that it then gives us the ability to access that information.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So as a collective, just branching out, reaching out,
mm-hmm.
and just how remarkable it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have a website, by the way, that people can go to just to get a little more information about the work that you're doing? Or
well, at the University of North Texas, if they go to that website and just search my name, Holden, my webpage will pop up. And it links to some recent publications and productions that I've done, and also to my complete vita, so people could find out more there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I look forward to this book.
Mm.
I have a sense that it's going to be very, very powerful. And with all of your experience and the connectedness to your heart and to this great consciousness, I think it's going to happen very quickly.
Good.
Yeah.
That's great news.
That is fantastic. I can't thank you enough for being here, and I want to just also thank you for your work, because we all benefit from this. And so, any message that you'd like to give our audience before we pass?
Oh, my. Should we just let it ring out?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Jan, is there any parting message that you'd like to give our audience?
No, I think everything that I think is most important to say I've said, and I just really want to thank you for the opportunity to say it.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So again, everyone, this is Marcy Newman, your host, and this is Heart Shift Radio. And I'm pretty certain that you can feel the shift in your heart even at this moment, because we've touched on some really beautiful things here. And this podcast and so many others you can access at www.heartshiftcoach.com. And I look forward to speaking with you all again soon. Many blessings and so much love and light to you all. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.